Welcome to the Tales Over Tales podcast, where dear friends connect over their love for good books, giggling, laughing, drinking adult-friendly beverages, and having a great time. I'm Jordan.
I'm Abigail.
How are you, my dear?
I'm good. I'm doing really well. Especially since I got to see you recently.
I know. Did you notice what I'm wearing?
I see. What a nice sweater.
I know. Very, very lovely human got this for me. You know?
Aw, thanks.
For those of you listening, I recently visited Abigail, which we are going to get to talk a lot about today, about our trip, our visit to see the one, the only, Kristen Hannah, because we are covering her book today, which I'm super excited to get into. But for those of you who know me well, you know that I am a Swiftie, and my dear Abby got me a really sweet sweater that basically has all of Taylor Swift's albums listed on them, and it's just a comfy, cozy sweater that's been making me feel like I'm being hugged by you when I wear it.
It's been like 2 weeks since we've seen each other. That feels like
I know. It went by way too fast, if you ask me, personally. Yeah. But oh my goodness. So yes, lots has happened in the last couple weeks. Let's catch up. You said you've been doing pretty well, enjoying yourself this weekend. What have you been up to?
Yeah, just kind of running errands. Like, you forget how much time, like, adulting takes. You think, oh, I'm just going to do this really quickly. And then you do this and this. And it's just like, okay, I'm cleaning. I'm doing this. We're cooking. We're meal prepping for dinner. And it's just like, oh, it's already 4 o'clock. What happened? Like, what happened?
Did the time go?
Yeah, seriously, that's what it felt like today. But overall, it was good. Like, highs and lows. High was getting to see you and us getting to spend some time together and catch up.
So much needed.
Because we haven't seen each other since your wedding.
I know. Can you believe it was almost a year and a half ago?
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
Oh, and I'm still married.
Mm-hmm. Amen. That's good. We want that.
Of course.
Exactly. So it's good, positive. So you're still married. Got to see you talk about that. And we got to visit Lancaster, and we got to see Kristen Hannah speak up on her new book, The Women, which we're going to be talking about today. But so good.
It was incredible. So incredible. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Well, do you have a low that you'd like to share from the last time listeners heard from you?
What's a low? You left.
You came and you left. I know.
Yeah. But I think, like, things have been relatively pretty good, you know, just kind of enjoying the new job and enjoying time with my boyfriend Matt. So yeah, things have been going well.
No lows. I like to hear that.
Yeah, so no lows. But you know, next month that could always change.
Right. Exactly.
Highs and lows of life. Well, what about you? Highs and lows.
I mean, overall, things have been really great, enjoying good weather and just getting to spend a lot of time taking care of things at home. I feel like that's been really good. I feel like I've been reading a lot of really good books lately, which I love, and like that's always nice. Yeah, and then I definitely feel like Marco and I have been able to spend some good time together, which has been good. I'm taking a little bit of his spring break off to also spend with him, so that'll be really nice. We're looking forward to that. My low, unfortunately, I have not been sleeping very well because my husband started Invisalign, which for those of you adults who have been through the Invisalign process, amen, it's awesome. Super glad that he is going after this. It also means he cannot wear his anti-snoring mouth guard at night. So sleep has been a struggle.
I'm leaving you.
I've been sending him to the guest bedroom on occasion. Honestly, that's how bad that it's been getting. But we're doing well. We're fine. And thankfully, the good news is, of course, it's temporary. I think he has like maybe 2 months at most left of it. So we just gotta trudge through and then we'll get past it and it'll be fine.
Yeah. You guys start sleeping with what do they call earplugs?
I know. I did. Somebody actually at church this morning was, I was talking to her about it and she was telling me she uses earplugs. And I was like, maybe I need to consider that. So, yes.
And they made them, like, they made some that are pretty comfortable and that fit well into the ears. I know I buy some whenever I fly because my ear tends to like pop and like hurt really badly. So, you know, maybe that's something to look into.
Old people, I could consider that. Did you just call me old?
No, I called myself old for needing earplugs for the descent from being on an airplane.
Good save. It's fine. We'll accept. Oh my gosh. Well, before we dive into this book, do we want to share with listener what we're drinking?
Yeah, definitely. I'm definitely drinking something plain gin and tonic. I don't even know what the name of the gin is. Matt had it and I was like, I'm going to use some. So got my he helped me make it. He helped me make sure there wasn't too much gin because I started pouring and he's like, that's, you don't need that much.
like whoa, sister. Slow down.
Yeah, exactly. I needed like half of what I actually was thinking I needed. So good thing he was there. But yeah, so just having gin and tonic, it's really good. That's our adult, that's my adult-friendly beverage for today.
I love it. I love it. I love it. Yeah, I had to go with an old-fashioned for this one. I almost, of course, I mean, I'm a wino, so I wanted just to go with a glass of wine. Listener, as we dive into book, you're going to understand why this book called for a little bit more than a glass of wine. Mm-hmm. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, we were like, we need something stronger.
Would you like to share a warning with our listener up at the top before I read the plot summary, Abby?
Yeah, definitely. So, spoiler alert, there are some spoilers coming up. If you haven't read the book, I want to encourage you to pause, read the book, and then listen into our thoughts, because we do go into detail about the book that is best reserved for you to, you know, discover on your own and feel all the feels that we did with this book.
Yes. Yes. And if you're not reading Kristen Hannah, why? Why aren't you? You just should be.
Yes. She's amazing. So, like, she's... we'll get into this, but the amount of times I threw this book was like crazy, and that's how I always am with Kristen Hannah. I'd be throwing this book. I'm like,
you and Alicia that said we need merch. And then I threw the book.
Yep, we do. I think Alicia said
that, on a t-shirt, on a baseball cap, on a coffee mug. I don't know, but I will buy that merch.
Right, we definitely need it. Seriously. And then another alert for listeners to be aware of is that we do go into talking about addiction, and the main character is heavily descent into addiction. So if that is something that is, you know, that brings up like discomfort, or not sure that you want to, you know, you're ready to like listen about like our conversation, we don't hit too deeply. But we will talk about it. So that is an alert to be aware of as we're going into today.
Yes, absolutely. And I think going forward on the podcast, just thinking of you, listener, wanting to be considerate of you. You know, we enjoy when you read along with us. We want to encourage you to read along with us. We are doing these deep dives. We are talking about books, whether we loved and hated them, whether we enjoyed them completely or we disliked them completely. but to just put that up at the top, yeah, this is full of spoilers. And there are some topics that we want to be sensitive to. So just encourage you to take care of yourself, listener. If talking about addiction, if talking about PTSD are sensitive things for you, then that's okay. Come back to us next month. We'll have another episode for you. No yes. problem. All right. So shall I get into the plot summary then?
Yes, please.
Okay. So The Women by Kristen Hannah. Frances Frankie McGrath is a young, vibrant, and naive California girl growing up at the turn of the century. The 1960s was a tumultuous time and overall difficult one for everyone, especially in the United States. At the heart of it all was the Vietnam War. After her brother Finley enlists to fight in the war, he is seen as a hero. But Frankie's decision to enlist in the Army Corps following nursing school is not met by her family and community with the same support. As the reader, we follow Frankie's journey before, during, and after the Vietnam War, alongside Barb and Ethel, two very intelligent and helpful Army nurses. Frankie experiences the highest of highs and lowest of lows when it comes to both love and war. While our beloved heroine navigates the tricky waters of addiction, PTSD, and even a little romance gone wrong, we are taken on a journey of self-discovery with her. The Women by Kristen Hannah is a gut-wrenching but heartwarming tale that shows us it takes bravery, courage, and deep-rooted relationships in order for anyone to survive. When push comes to shove, through good times and bad, women can be heroes.
Women can be heroes. Oh, I love that line. Oh, goodness.
Don't love the man who said it first, but we'll get into that.
We'll get it.
Excuse me while I take a sip.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, that man. But, oh, my goodness. I mean,
are we even going to say his name? I guess we have to. I don't really know how I feel.
I'll say his name once when the time comes.
That's all you get. Yeah. Okay.
No mention.
No, okay, but go ahead. Why don't you share your initial thoughts, Abigail, please? What did you think of the book overall?
I think Kristen Hannah outdid herself with this book.
What?
I think this book is one of my favorite Kristen Hannah books. And I say that every time when she comes out with a new book. But I will say, this is like the character development, not only the main character, but the characters around Frankie. Just so beautifully written.
You wanted a book for Barb, didn't you? You wanted a book for Ethel.
Yes, for both of them.
I know.
Like, their stories, I know. Oh my goodness, these women were incredible. We'll talk about who they are, but I think Frankie is a beautifully written character. And it's so funny. So we went to go see Kristen Hannah, and she was talking about this book. She was saying that Frankie was her favorite character that she's written. And having that in mind going into it, it's like, this is my favorite character that I've read about and followed along in this journey. Frankie, I loved her. I was sad for her. I was angry at her. And at the end, I was happy for her.
Yeah.
I don't know. What are your initial thoughts?
Because
I can go on.
No, same. I feel like you said it so well when you said that she outdid herself. Something, and honestly, listener, we're going to get into Kristen Hannah a lot when we talk about this book, obviously, because getting to listen to her speak live and just address a lot of the process for her, the research, the different things that she does as a writer, it was incredible to listen to. It gave me more perspective, but it also brought more respect for me as the reader, for her as the author. And I have to agree with you. This is probably the most well-rounded female heroine character she's ever written. So let's just at the top talk about the books of Kristen Hannah that we've read in the past. So we've both read The Four Winds, we've
The Great
both read
Alone.
The Great Alone. You've read The Nightingale.
Yes, so good.
I have not yet, but I need to. And then I've read Winter Garden.
I have not
I
yet,
think
and
those are the
I
only
need.
ones. Have you read Firefly Lane?
I don't think, no, I have not, because I don't have it on my shelf, so I know I have not.
Okay.
But I want
So
to.
that, oh, absolutely. Now, both of us loved The Great Alone and we loved The Four Winds, right? Both of those books took you on just as much of a journey as the reader as well. There absolutely was something so different and unique to this one, though.
I would agree. I would agree with that, because you called me and you're like, we've read her books and we know how heart-wrenching it can be. But I think this was harder because of the research she did and the interviews she did that we know of from that interview that we got to see when we got to see her speak, that the research, like, not only is she like looking into like historical, like research about like the Vietnam itself, she's interviewing women. And I think that that's where it hits for me, because it's like this is part of like a woman's like the a collective of women's stories that she's written. And so it's not, Frankie is not just like an arbitrary character that, like, okay, she created this. Like, Frankie was born from the story of these brave women that were in the army during the Vietnam War, holding it down. And I think that's where I like kind of like get like that heart-wrenching feeling, because I feel that sadness for like those women that had to endure like what they did when they were at war and when they came home.
She's your mother. She's your sister. She's your friend. She's every woman almost, it feels like. So I, oh my goodness. Yeah, just so good. Now, if we're trying to take this sequentially for you, listener, to stay on track with everything that happens in the book. I was shocked by how quickly Finley dies, her brother dies. So, to give you context, if you haven't read the book, listener, immediately starting the book is the start of the war, and Finley is going off to war. He dies not even what, 6 months maybe to a year into the war, something like that, while she's going through nursing school.
Absolutely. Yep, that's what happened. And so we get our introduction to Frankly and Finley at the same time, where they're at a party thrown by their parents, and their parents are wealthy, well-to-do, come from old money situation, and so have a long line of heroes that have fought in war previously. And we see Finley as like this like carefree, charismatic, individual who's excited to go to war and make his family proud and make his way on that hero's wall that their father has, like, of all the men who have served.
I'm
And
so glad that you brought that up.
yes, that plays a major role, the hero's wall, throughout the book. Oh my goodness. Like, yeah, I don't know if you have anything to share about like that first meeting with Frankie and Finley.
Well, this is also where we meet he who must not be named, but he's really not he who must not be named. So we're just gonna call him Smarmy Weasel, aka Rye. We're gonna get into it, listener. Okay, listen. Rye is Finley's best friend. We got a brother's best friend situation. going on over here. Normally, I'm a fan of it, Abigail. Normally, I'm a fan of it. Listener, you're going to find out why we're not. Okay? But anyway.
We gotta tell you. Because a swarmy weasel is
Just like a weasel. Yet at the same time, how was it that he was the one that was like, women can be heroes? Like, oh, it's really interesting that there aren't any women up on this wall.
Absolutely. Unless they're married, you know, that's how you make it to the hero's wall.
The hero's wall is McGrath men over the years of the family McGrath that have served their country, and then females are basically only in wedding photos.
Yep, that's the only way they make it to the wall. And yeah, so we meet Rye. And he says this line, and it really resonates with Frankie because she's never thought of that, the fact that women can be heroes too. So this ignites something within her. It plants a seed, you know, really. And then I think that it was, correct me if I'm wrong, it wasn't until after Finley's death that it really sparked something for her to, like, no, like, I'm going to be a hero too.
Well, the way that Frankie is written initially, you get this feeling, you get this sense like she's so close to finishing nursing school, and she's kind of a little bit like, now what? I'm just supposed to go get married, go have a family. My brother is off in a war. My brother is fighting in a war. I should be able to do something too. So from the jump with Frankie, there was this sense that she sought out adventure. She sought out something more than what was simply just going to be handed to her, right?
Yes,
So
absolutely.
I would agree, though, it is her brother's death that ultimately triggers, like, well, no, I need to do something too. And yeah, Mama
I'm
and Papa McGrath are not pleased.
No, they are not. I'm recall like yeah I'm recalling yeah so she wanted to she's you're right she's had this interest. She went to the Marines. They said, no, you need 2 years of experience. She went to the Air Force. They're like, no, you need 2 years of experience. She went to the Army, and the Army's like, sure. And she's like, yeah, I want to be
Need
able to see
nurses,
my
we'll take
brother.
you.
Like, you have no experience, we'll take you. Oh, sure, you want to see your brother while you're out there? Of course. Yeah, sign up, sign this line. We're gonna make sure you see your brother, and it's all gonna be great. And you don't need that experience. And then she comes home, and you're right, Mama and Papa McGrath are not happy, but that's the same time they get the news of Finley's death, and she's already signed the dotted line.
Absolutely. Now, we're going to talk about briefly her time in Vietnam, of course, because it is a decent chunk of the book. But before we get to that, let's talk about the family dynamic and relationships for a second, because, listener, when she comes back from tour number two and finds out that her entire community in Coronado, California, lovely Coronado, California, all mom and dad's friends have been told that Frankie has been studying abroad in Florence.
Two tours in Vietnam, and her parents, because of their shame, like their sense of sh their feeling of shame, like let's call it what they felt, they lied to everybody. But
So crazy.
and I was just, and I think that it's hard. It was like, I don't know about you, but that hit me hard when she found out about the lie because of everything we know that Frankie's been through, how she went into the war and she just like glamorized everything and she wanted to be a hero and get on the hero's wall. And she was put in these really traumatic situations with mass casualties. With like death, like seeing young men and like drones just coming to like coming to her like the medic tent in like pieces, right? Like, and then also trigger warning can be graphic. Like the one that stuck out to me is the soldier that came in with his like leg in his hand, in his arms, you know? And so that was the reality, like reality quickly set in from the moment she landed in Vietnam to like the moment she faced her mass like experience with mass casualties. Yeah. So.
I think what really stuck out to me about her time in Vietnam was the burning baby. I was gut-wrenched. I was just so devastated. Listener, she's literally holding a baby that's been burned by napalm, right? That is dying in her arms from napalm burns.
Which she puts together that it wasn't the Vietnamese who were spreading that. It was the US. And so here she is fighting this war and saving these lives because she believed in defending and fighting for her country. And then as time goes on, she's slowly disillusioned. Like little moments like that. You know, she doesn't say she is, but it's like little moments like that where she had like where we get a peek into her thought process of like where she puts two and two together. She said, wait, it couldn't have been them. It had to be us.
Well, and there's a difference between her first tour and her second tour, right? When she ends, her first tour is about to end and she re-ups and she signs up for the second tour. By the time her second tour is getting around to starting, soldiers are fed up. They're fed up. They're tired. They're done. They feel like they have nothing left in them, right? So let's talk for a second too about the obviously the incredible people that she gets to meet in her time in Vietnam. So first, she gets to meet Barb and Ethel. We're going to talk a lot about Barb and Ethel, but Dr. Jamie Callahan.
Who? Dr. Jamie.
Oh, he just takes her under his wing. He really looks after her. Listen, listener, she's not that great of a nurse at the start. But then again, let's be honest, you need time and experience. And she is about to get a healthy, heavy dose of both.
Absolutely. And it's those friendships of Barb, Ethel, Jamie that get her to where she needs to be, right? Jamie used, you know, when she was experiencing like her first like emergency situation, he looked at her and said, "No fear, McGrath." And she held on to that throughout like the rest of her tour and really throughout her life. But yeah, those friendships that were built, like she made comrades that turned into lifelong friends.
Even after we found out that he was married, did you want her with Jamie?
I'm usually like, no. Like, you know, I was like her, like, because that's how she is, like, in the beginning of the book. She's like, married men? No, absolutely not. And so I was like, okay. But as time goes on, initially I was like, good for you. But then as time went on, I'm like, girl, you should have said yes. You should have said yes. That's what I felt.
Oh, Lord have mercy. No. Oh, gosh. But then, listener, so initially, her brother Finley is the first casualty, quote unquote, the first death we experience in the book, basically. Then we lose Jamie. And then she's experiencing all of these things. She has Barb and Ethel by her side, which, oh, I just, it was amazing. It was incredible to see these women doing life together, saving lives together, the way that Kristen Hannah really just wrote them in the trenches. It was just absolutely beautiful. Yeah, then we reconnected with Smarmy Weasel, aka Rye. Yes.
Yep, connected with
Listen, if
him.
you could see Abigail's face, she's literally like, do we have to talk about this now?
It's an important thing for the plot, I guess, but we have to talk about it.
Oh my gosh. So, like we said at the top, listener, Rye was her older brother Finley's best friend. Basically, we find out that he has made it through. They end up reconnecting. I can't remember, shoot, I can't remember where they reconnect.
I think it was like a party, might have been Ethel's goodbye party.
Yeah, something like that. It was Ethel's goodbye party, maybe after her last tour, because she was the first to leave. I think you're right. She was the first of the three of them to finish her time in Vietnam and then leave. So she reconnects with Rye, finds out, apparently, according to Rye, that like he's had feelings for her all this time, and she, your eye roll, I
Go on, talk about him. Yeah, his feelings.
can't. Anyway, she asks him very specifically if he's engaged. That's what she asks him. Is that right?
Because she heard like he was engaged, and so she called him out. Yeah, she confronted him.
He said no. I'm not engaged. Okay, cool. Great. Mind you, we should have shared this with you as well, listener, if you haven't read the book. By this point, Frankie's only what? 21? 22?
22.
Yeah, because she's getting ready to start her second tour. So she like just had her 22nd birthday, maybe. So, oh my gosh. Anyway, to go through all the things that she goes through, she makes this love connection with Rye in Vietnam. They assure each other they're gonna make it out of Vietnam together. They want to see a life together past Vietnam. He takes her virginity willingly. She gives it to him. And then she goes home. And around the same time that she goes home, she hears that he died, that he didn't make it.
No, she doesn't go home yet. They meet for R&R in Kauai, and
Yes.
her virginity. That's the start. That's before she starts her second tour. She does her second tour. They're in this romance where they see each, he flies to see her every so often, whatever. And then she goes home, like prepared to, like, you know, because they've been talking about like having a life together and marriage and like all this stuff. She was in, girl had it bad. She was in love. And then she gets home, and a few days after getting home, yeah, she finds, few weeks after getting home, I should say, she finds out that he his plane got shot down.
That was so crushing. So, on top of dealing with the fact that her parents will not talk about Vietnam, they won't talk about the war. They tell all of their friends how she was in Florence studying abroad. She
Yep, said
wasn't,
that.
you know. And then to come back, not only finding out the love of your life, supposedly, right, is dead, but then that's when we start to see a lot of the PTSD manifest and the PTSD come up,
And always a
which.
nightmare, like she has nightmares, like night terrors that leave her, like she wakes up on the floor and in a cold sweat.
It's also just very edgy and jumpy. Emotionally, she's not in a very safe space. She's constantly on alert and she's always overly sensitive. I'm not saying that to say that there's anything wrong with being overly sensitive, but as someone who has a tendency to live in a state of being constantly overly sensitive, that's exhausting. That's absolutely exhausting. And Mama and Papa McGrath did not help at all in dealing with any of this one bit.
Absolutely not. Finding out that they were ashamed of her, told her friends that they're in Florence. She gave him a photo of her, Barb and Ethel, to for him to put on the hero's walks because she thought, like, wow, my parents are so proud of me. And then very quickly, disillusioned. And that kind of gets me into like this like theme that's throughout the book, this theme of loss, right? She's lost a lot of people, friends, seen soldiers like lost through that, loss of her innocence, loss of control, loss of the love, and loss of like a dream, like dream in terms of like, you know, coming home and getting a hero's welcome and her family talking about these things. But yeah, her family, her parents, her mom is very dismissive, actually. Let's talk about her mom too. Like she'll talk about Vietnam and her mom will be like, oh, we don't want, like, you know, we shouldn't talk about like things like unpleasant things, or no one wants to hear that, or you know, like things like that. Like her mom dismisses her and her father just ignores her. Yes, ignores her, and I'm like, I feel so bad for her.
Well, and then it finally reaches a point essentially where her mom is the first one to give her pills, right? Her mom is the first one to give her medication because they just don't know what else to do. They don't know how else to help her. And Kristen Hannah writes this so beautifully. It's not just her parents that are having this problem or that are dealing with this issue. The nation as a whole at this time in our history was dealing with a problem of telling soldiers, telling people that had actually seen combat and that had been to war, forget about it. Don't talk about it. We love you. We appreciate you. Thank you so much for serving. We don't need to hear about the things that you've done.
Like
How
getting
insensitive is that?
very. That was like another thing. And another thing Kristen Hannah does well is that even what's going on in the background plays such a significant role in like what's happening,
Yes.
you know, to her. Like the Vietnam soldiers, like, you know, when she was a nurse, when she got back and she found like a stable nursing job, how a soldier came in and he was not doing well, and his family had like disowned him and like all these things. And you know, like, and she tried to bond with him, the fact that she, you know, she served too. He's like, I think he said something about like, oh, we're both the walking dead, you know, and just like walks out. But like, it's so true. That's such a testament to what she's experiencing, but she doesn't, like, you know, that's a hard thing, is because she won't doesn't like she does not get the help that she needs. She went to the VA twice, you know, looking for to be part of like group therapy for Vietnam soldiers, and they, you know, every time like people be like, there are no women in Vietnam. That made me so angry every time I heard that, and it was a constant thing.
I can't even imagine someone literally telling you what you have experienced, where you have been, what you've done, where you've gone, what, like all of these. No, none of it happened. None of it was real. Women weren't in Vietnam. I remember when we were at the live event listening to Kristen Hanna talk about some of this, there was this part of me that literally was like, women actually heard that? People actually said that to women? Just so mind-blowing to me.
But
I
they
can't. Oh. So, anyway, to follow along with the story, yeah, she's turned down by the VA twice, attempting to go to help, to get help. She's trying to hold down a stable job. Mom has given her, oh my gosh, what was it that her mother gave her, basically?
It's called Mother's Little Helper. I think it was Valium.
Thank
That's
you. Yes, it was Valium. So this is where essentially Frankie becomes addicted to alcohol. She becomes addicted to Valium. There are multiple accounts in the book. She can't remember how much she drank. She can't remember if she ate with what she drank. She talks about being thirsty and how it would be a good idea to drink water. That's always a good idea to drink water out there. Hydrate, kids. It's important. Yet she never drinks water.
She drinks hard liquor. That's her, because we see her fall into her addiction. And it's the way it's written so well, because you think like, oh, like she just like has like a drink here and there. And then when those lines are written of like she doesn't know how much she drank, she doesn't know how many pills that she's taken, like she doesn't know that she's eaten, then we start to feel like, oh, something's up. Something's going on with her. And so that was like I said, that background information, like even if it seems like it just be one line and then like they'll move on to the next thing, but it sticks with you. It's like, wait, like she's been drinking a lot lately. Wait, I thought it was like every so often. Like, no, it seems like all the time she's drinking.
It's insane. So this is where, by this point as well, Barb and Ethel get involved. They come essentially from the East Coast. They give Frankie options, right? They say, here's what you can do. This is the help that we're offering you. Come to Virginia, right? Ethel talks a lot about her family farm in Virginia, outside of Charlottesville, I think it is. She talks a lot about how working with horses has been really healing. You get to see how these beautiful women have maintained their connection, maintained their relationships through writing letters and all kinds of different things. It made me think of you and I like. Because when Barb and Ethel show up on her doorstep, immediately I was like, oh, I know Abigail would be there for me. Like, she gets that call that I am in the hospital, or she gets that call that I'm in a desperate way. Like, okay, here's what we're doing, right? And then Mama McGrath has a stroke. Now, let's talk for a second about how Frankie finds out that her mom has a stroke. So, Frankie, Barb, and Ethel, they're doing all of this work as veterans, right, to be a voice in the community to raise awareness for the needs of veterans. And they're hosting some kind of event, prisoners of war, POW, a POW event. And that's when Frankie sees someone from Coronado Island who tells her, "I'm so sorry about your mother." Mind you, Lister, Frankie has not heard from Mama or Papa McGrath for a while at this point. She's been living with Barb and Ethel in Virginia now for a little over a year, maybe a couple of years.
And then she rushes home. She goes to the hospital. She sees her mom, and that's when she makes the decision to stay. The reason she left for Virginia also is that her and her father had like a falling out where she was drinking too much, and she told him, like, basically blamed him for Finley's death, and he kicked her out. So she hadn't seen her parents physically since then. So walking into that room, and then her father comes in, and that was the first time she like he'd like they laid on eyes on each other after that. So yeah, it took a lot of like forgiveness or like strength for her to like be able to help her mom like through this time after her stroke. And she found like a steady job, and she met someone.
Yes, let's talk about Henry for a second.
Dear Henry, he is a psychiatrist, and he was a saint. Like such a really like such a sweet man, but she didn't love him. He loved her. He was in love with her, but she did not love him because she just like was so closed off to the possibility. And then as time goes on, they're dating. She doesn't tell anybody because like she's not in love with him, so she doesn't want like really want anybody to know. Then people find out that they're dating, blah, blah, blah. And then she finds out she's pregnant. And this is the hope she's this is the first time she's had hope in a very long time. And she finds herself slowly getting excited. Henry asks her to marry him. She doesn't love him, but she said it would be the right thing to do and she can learn. And then she has a miscarriage. Man.
Okay, let's talk about the miscarriage for a second. But before we get into the miscarriage, too, I'm super curious. I feel like I always ask you these questions as a mental health professional. So let's have Abigail, listener, put on her mental health professional hat. What are your thoughts or feelings about Henry getting involved with somebody like Frankie? Here's the thing, she was not one of his patients. So that's not, we're not talking about that, listener.
Yeah, there's no like breaking ethics or anything like that. They were not.
But as a mental health professional yourself, regularly, like, not, I shouldn't say like regularly assessing people, different things like that, but like, do you think it was the wisest choice for someone like Henry in his profession to make the decision to get romantically involved with Frankie?
I think that he made his choice out of like being human and loving her. I think that he didn't know how to help her since she was not willing to receive the help. But he was hoping that they like, that like, things would be okay and that they'd fall in love. And my thought process is that maybe he eventually thought like she'd change. But the other part of me that was frustrated with Henry was that he saw that she was struggling really badly. And I think like if you love someone, let's take the mental health part, like the fact that he was a psychiatrist out. If you love someone, you want them to have the help that they need and you push for that, support them in that direction. I think that he saw what he wanted to see. Because we're human, we'll
Thank
always
you.
see what we want to see. And I think that he just was being human and he fell in love and he saw what he wanted to see. He fell in love with a woman and he thought that maybe like through his love, possibly he thought through his love that she could change. change, like, and that she would be okay. But I think that she hid the magnitude of what was going on with her very well.
I would agree with that. And that's what I appreciate that you brought up, because I had the same thought that he was really only just seeing what he wanted to see. He was really only acknowledging things. Now, I will also add to that argument, though, Frankie was only giving him so much to work with.
Mm-hmm.
I do feel like, in a lot of ways, she was leading him on. Mm-hmm. She was convinced that Rye had been her one great love in her life, which, listener, if you've listened to our last podcast where we covered One True Loves by Taylor Jenkins Reid, we talked about having multiple loves in your life. Yeah. And I commend Frankie for the very mature or wise decision that it was to commit to the relationship, especially after she found out that she was pregnant, and to say, I'm going to stick with this. I'm going to figure it out and try to see how I feel about myself, about him. I know that we're going to have this baby. We're now going to get married. Like, all of these things sort of falling into place, right? Like, yeah. I don't know. And go ahead.
I was going to say that I also feel like Frankie was also lying to herself in a lot of ways. I don't think she realized how much help she actually needed. I don't think she realized how much pain she was in. And she tried to mask it so much for so long that she swept it under the rug. And, you know, maybe she wanted to see herself through Henry's eyes, oh, he sees me as like this great mom and wife, and I want to be that. So I'll try to be that. But she was
absolutely think she tried to see herself through Henry's eyes. And mm-hmm. after she got pregnant, she tried to see herself through her mom's eyes as well, because her mom threw her a rope at that point, right? Okay, yeah. Here you go. You get married, you have a baby, blah, blah, blah. You're on the trajectory. You're on the acceptable, quote unquote, mm-hmm. path that yeah. we've required of you, that we've asked of you. Mm-hmm. I can't help but wonder. I can't help but think, gosh, what would it have been like? What would have happened if that's where Kristen Hannah had ended the story? If she hadn't had a miscarriage, if she had stayed with Henry, do you think we would have the same Frankie?
I think that we would have desired more. We would have been like, wait, what happened after the wedding? Because we know too much. We know too much for it to have just ended there. That we know what she was struggling with, like her PTSD symptoms, being told she can't talk about it to her family, not feeling safe enough to talk about it to her friends, you know, just kind of the like how culturally and like how the rest of the world viewed her. Like we knew too much. Like there was so much going on with her internally that for us to have end for Kristen Hannah to have ended the story there, I think it would have been a disservice to like all that Frankie had gone through. That like, oh, you know, like
then
yeah, we talk about it.
Right. And it wouldn't have been the plot twist of all plot twists. Here we go. You still mm-hmm. got your gin and tonic?
Well, it's here. It's here.
Yeah, Rye was alive.
Yep.
Not only was Rye alive.
Yep, he was a prisoner of war. And he was... Yep, and she... Oh, my gosh. Let me take another
hit. I believe not. What else, Abigail Charles? Tell the people.
He was alive, and she went to go meet him because he was getting off the plane in California. She drove to San Diego with Barb and Ethel, her ride or die, like, oh, he's here. We're coming. They showed up. They drove her there. And she was pregnant at this point. She was pregnant and engaged at this point. And he gets off the plane and she's like so excited. She sees him. She's, you know, and he gets off the plane and he runs, or he walks to a woman and a little girl and a sign that says, "Welcome home, Daddy."
He's married.
He's married. And he got
baby. You asked the wrong question. You asked the wrong question, ma'am.
She asked the wrong question, and she went over there to like, you know, maybe rekindle her love or to see him. I don't know what she wanted, to be honest. Like, she
was like, the first or the fifth time you had thrown the book at this point.
Girl, that was like, I had thrown it multiple times, but that the way I threw it that time, it had some distance. I'm not gonna lie, it had some distance.
Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. So, listener, she ends up breaking things off with Henry due to the miscarriage and the fact that now Rye has re-entered the picture. Oh yeah, you heard me correctly. Even though homeboy's married, with a baby.
Mm-hmm. With a little girl. Smarty Riesel, and they reconnect.
Frankie becomes the other woman.
Yep. And that made me upset. When she made the choice to still be with him, even though she knew, and he gave her some sob story about, like, I didn't love her, I didn't know if I was coming back, and I knew if I had told you, you weren't gonna, you know.
This was when Abigail called me. Mind you, here's some backstory. I finished this book a little bit before Abigail. I literally told her, buckle up, baby. This is going to be a ride.
Yep.
And I was waiting. I was waiting for that phone call. I saw your name pop up on caller ID. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah. Because that was the time I'm usually asleep. And so for me to call you like 10 something p.m. my time.
It was like 8 or 9 p.m. my time, which was like 10 or 11 p.m. for you.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I was like, that smarmy weasel. Oh, and you exactly.
We haven't even gotten to the worst of it yet, listener. We're almost an hour into this podcast episode, and we haven't even gotten to the worst of it. So now, Frankie's having this affair with Rye. She's still on the pills. She's still on the booze. And Rye is still with his wife.
Yeah, he's like, he told her, oh, I'm filing for divorce. And I, you know, just give it some time. And, you know, and then she's working a shift at the hospital.
Your facial expressions right now are everything.
Great. I'm angry. I'm sure listeners, you can hear it in my voice.
I cannot wait to start posting our episodes on YouTube so that you all can, like, see the facial expressions. Anyway, keep going, Abigail. Carry on with the story.
Yeah, so she is working a hospital shift. She finds out he's in the hospital. She's not sure why. She goes up to his room, but she's a nurse, so she's like, where's this guy? And she walks in, and the wife is in bed with a baby, and it says, this balloon, a balloon. It's a boy, and Rye just sitting there.
Baby number two.
That he says he's leaving, and that he's filing for divorce, and that it's like he's leaving, and that he asked her to marry her. Rye had asked Frankie to marry her before.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Baby number two.
It's an even more downhill spiral from that, listener. She gets into her car. She has a DUI. She nearly kills somebody. Mm-hmm. Okay? Like, this is bad news bears. This is bad news bears for everybody involved. Now, props to Papa McGrath.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is finally the point where her dad is like, listen, you're too addicted to alcohol. You're too addicted to these pills. No. You've accidentally attempted to take your life on more than one occasion at this point.
Mm-hmm. Because that's where he finds her.
Can't handle this.
Yeah, that's where he finds her. He finds her in the ocean. I don't know where he came from. I think there was a part of him that was worried. Found her in the ocean, pulled her out. He had to swim, pull her out of the ocean. And yeah, he had to commit her. Like, he took her to the emergency department. And he was, like you said, he was like, enough is enough. Like, you, like, this is too much. And yeah, she got taken to the emergency department and was involuntarily admitted.
This is going to sound like a super silly question. Forgive me. People can still be involuntarily admitted. No? Or was that a thing of the time? Okay.
No, people can still be voluntarily admitted or involuntarily admitted. Basically, if you're proven to be a danger to yourself or someone else, they'll give you a choice. They will, you know, at the hospital, they'll either tell you you can be admitted voluntarily. You can say, like, I want to do this and, you know, get admitted for, like, you know, X amount of time. Or you, like, we'll admit you involuntarily. And there's consequences to that. I know in PA, I recently learned if you get involuntarily admitted, that means you lose, like, your right to, like, carry a gun and, like, other things. And, like, I think, like, they can be, like, I think someone had, like, their license suspended. And so there's consequences. So people usually say okay because they don't want to experience the consequences. I will say the difference is it's a lot harder to be admitted voluntarily or involuntarily than it was back then. Back then, you can just say, a man can say, like, hey, she's, like, hysterical or this is going on. And she can, like, they can be, like, it. She, there's no choice. Now there's a choice and there's very specific criteria.
I would say it's still very easy this day and age to throw money at a problem.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I'm going to say. Mm-hmm. So with the context and the nature of the fact that Frankie comes from a very well-to-do family who her father even gets her DUI charge not dismissed, but it gets broken down to like a misdemeanor rather than a felony.
I believe
she almost killed someone.
Yeah, she almost killed him. And it was like this principal at a school who had a family, and she like went to apologize. Like, I'll say this, she went to apologize, and he's like, and he was just angry at her. And she thought, like, I'm so sorry, I can buy you a new bike, right? Money. She tried to throw money at it because that's what her parents taught her. And he's like, a new bike, like, you almost killed me. You know, are you kidding me? So she gets
involved. Like, it's not the same as a life, lady.
Yeah, like, yep. But she gets involuntarily committed, but then, like, she's sedated heavily, which, like, they tend to not do that, like, for no reason anymore, like, just sedate you just because.
Okay.
And then in and out of her consciousness, she sees Henry, and he's like, oh, I'll get you out. And then when she finally, the sedation wears off, she's inpatient at a facility that Henry helped build.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So,
and that's where sort of her healing journey finally begins a little bit, if you will. So by this point, Henry has moved on to, which is really nice to see. He does not oversee her care either, which would have been a conflict. Would that have been a conflict of interest even that day and age?
Yes, because it goes against the code of ethics, meaning that you can't have, like, a more than one type of relationship with the individual. I forget what it's called. I think dual relationship, that's what it's called. So it would have been, yeah, conflict of interest against the code of ethics. So he spoke to her to get her ready to talk to his colleague, and that's who she worked with.
So she slowly but surely gets herself back on track from that point, which is really nice. I can't remember exactly when the point in time, but towards the end, obviously, the last couple of chapters, the last few chapters is where a lot of healing takes place. Even in her relationship with her parents, but also in her relationship with herself, Frankie starts to feel this shift. She starts to feel like her time in California has drawn to a close, is drawing to a close. She tells her parents, if I'm lucky, maybe I would get my nursing license back, but the reality is that's not the setting that I'm fit for anymore. That's not the setting that I'm cut out for anymore. I love California, but I feel like it has served its purpose for me. I feel like it has served its time. Heck, like this woman is in her mid to late 20s. Let's talk about this for a second as we're getting to the end of the book. And I promise, listener, I know that we're getting a little long on this, but we're going to wrap up here in a second. She's in her mid to late 20s. Abigail, she has literally lived more life than you and I have ever lived. And I'm going to be 33 this year. Is that not insane?
Not even 30, and she like what she's experienced, it ages her too. Like it ages her like in a very mental and physical way. But for her to have not yet, not even been 30 yet, to have experienced all that trauma. Oh yeah, you're right. She's been through more life than both of us combined. It's like, wow.
It's just wild. So basically, listener, she ends up in Montana. She finds land in Montana that has room for a farm. She can buy a couple of horses. She can buy a few horses. She really bonded and connected with Ethel even more over that during her time in Virginia. It felt like a lot of that was probably off page. I know I'm speculating. Whimsy, whimsy. But anyway, she ends up in Montana, basically deciding that that's where she wants to spend her days, live her life. And she creates a space for veterans, female women, veterans that need a safe space to go where they can feel like they are accepted, like what they've gone through, what they've experienced, and what they've seen. It's not that it's okay, but that it was real, that it was real, that it happened, that it mattered, that it mattered.
And she created the space for herself and other women that she needed. And I think that was a beautiful part. That was a beautiful part of her healing.
Is that when you started to cry? Because that's when I started to cry.
Me too. Like I was definitely got emotional with that when the book was talking about like all the women that came to her. Like that's what I was saying at the end. I was happy for her because she finally found her place. And like, yeah, and it was like even now I'm like starting to get emotional about it. But like she finally found her place, right? I'm just like I thought I cried all the times and felt
And then at the end, it's the memorial, it's the 20-year memorial, and they are opening a women in Vietnam memorial.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And she sees Jamie.
Jamie, who she thought was dead.
Oh God.
Oh God. That part. I felt it. That part, like when she looks up and it's Jamie, and he pulled, because like before the last time she saw him, he was all charred up and he was not doing well. And so she like wrote, like, you know, on a rock, like some encouragement. And, you know, 20 years later, he pulls the rock out of his pocket and said, like, you know, that it got him through some hard times. Right. Jordan's feeling it.
I kid you not, Marco came home from the grocery store when I was finishing this book, and I was sitting in my rocking chair. I'm such an old woman. I'm sorry. I was sitting in my rocking chair, and I'm literally reading this part, and I just am crying.
Yeah.
And he's looking at me like, what is wrong? Yeah. Are you okay? And I pointed to the book. I'm like, I'm almost done. It's fine. I'm almost done.
But it was, oh my goodness. Such a, Kristen Hannah, if you ever hear this, like, girl, you slayed. You did it.
And then with the parents. And I just.
The parents finally understood. It took her breaking down going to the hospital, but they finally understood. And I love the part, this was like after when they picked her up from the hospital, it was like a really small thing of passing. Like her mom said, like her duffel bag still smelled like mildew after all these years.
Yes.
And she's like, oh, and she talked about monsoon season. And then instead of changing the subject, her mom was like, that must have been difficult. That was the first time.
Unpleasant. That must have been unpleasant.
Unpleasant. That was the first time her parents even tried and allowed her to speak about her experience. Mm-hmm. Ugh. Beautiful.
Lord have mercy. Susanna, just, you get us every time.
Every time.
Every single stinking time.
For real.
Oh my gosh. I can't even.
Yes,
Lord have mercy.
If you're still with us and you haven't read the book, go out, buy Kristen Hannah.
What are you still doing here? Why have you continued to listen to this episode? You should have stopped it a long time ago and just gone and read the book.
Exactly. If you're still here, you haven't read the book, buy The Women by Kristen Hannah, because you will not be disappointed.
No, not at all. And we truly do mean what we say. Like, this woman has continued to get better and better and better. After we went to her live event in Lancaster, we literally were in the car driving back, and I remember pulling up Kristen Hannah's Wikipedia page, and I made an observation to you. I said, she takes her time. Mm-hmm. It almost seems like she only comes out with a new book every 2 to 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
This woman is intentional. She is intentional. She is genuine. She's authentic. She takes her time and she thoroughly researches.
Yes.
Abigail and I cannot even tell you, listener, when we went to this event and we had older women, these beautiful females, stand up and say, I've never heard or seen the experience written like this.
Yes.
But I was alive during the Vietnam War. I lived through this.
Mm-hmm.
I walked this journey.
Yeah.
And it's a testament to how much energy and effort, just how much blood, sweat, and tears Kristen Hannah poured into this book. It was beautiful.
Yes, absolutely.
Just absolutely beautiful.
A quick like annotation she shared, that this is a story she thought of years ago And when she pitched it to her publisher, she's like, the publisher's like, you are not, basically, you are not ready to write a book like this. And like, you know, me, I would have been like, what? Like, that's annoying, new publisher. But she took that and she knew she was right. And years later, when she was ready to write this book, like, this was the timing was impeccable. And I'm happy, I'm glad she waited.
Well, here's the really funny thing. So, listener, to give you some context, because at the event, Kristen Hannah shared about like just her time and her experience. She's been around for years. If you look at her catalog of work, she's done many, many things. And she made this really funny comment. She said, you know, I wrote my first novel, I wrote my first book, and miraculously enough, it needed zero editing. It was perfect. It was flawless. And from that moment, I remember looking up at the stage of her, and I don't know if you had this thought too, Abby, but I literally was like, this woman is humble. What she's trying to say is, she pitched this idea to her editor in 1997, almost 20 years ago. What? 15 years ago. And her editor said, you're not ready. You're not good enough. She took that critique. She took that criticism. She took that advice. She didn't let it bother her. She didn't let it deter her. She kept the idea in the back of her mind because she said, oh, I'm not good enough now. Oh, great. That means I'm going to be.
And then
Then I'll
also
be good enough later.
to give some context, girl, it was 27 years ago, not 15.
Thank you. Thank
You're
you.
welcome. Because we're old, and 30 years ago, I was like, 30 years ago was the 70s.
Just rude. How are you going to do that? That's just rude.
I had to, because you know the listeners were gonna do the math, and I was like, I have to tell her.
My husband, of all people, would do the math and he would literally be like, Jordan, what are you doing? Oh my God.
But
Right.
yeah.
Before we get into some end matter, oh my gosh, our film and TV movie segment. Come on. How do you picture this? Tell me.
All right, picture this. I think for Frankie, Anne Hathaway, I
I like
think that
it. I like it. I
she's
like it.
a great actress. She can play like the doe-eyed, like innocent, like Devil Wears Prada type of like, like, oh, like just definitely like, very new. But then she could also play the individual who's been traumatized, Les Miserables, right? Like those are the two things that I thought of, and I was like, she can do it both, like both ways, and I think we can really progress with her. I didn't really give much thought into Rye. I was just like, oh, he's handsome. Chad Michael Murray, like, he's
I
handsome.
wonder why.
Yeah, he's such a great character. But yeah, Chad Michael Murray, I thought of him. And then for Barb, Lupita Nyong'o, I think she'd do well. And then Ethel would be Amy Adams.
Loved your thought of Ethel as Amy Adams, or Amy Adams as Ethel. Sorry, I wrote that down. I don't know why. I was thinking a lot of The Help when I was reading this book. And that's where like Jessica Chastain or Bryce Dallas Howard came to my mind in terms of Frankie for whatever reason. But also Jennifer Goodwin, she just seems like she would be a really well-rounded actress for that role too. And then I know back in November, listener, of last year, we covered Black Cake by Charmaine Wilkerson, which has also been adapted into a TV series. I don't know if you've gotten a chance to watch it yet. Have you?
Not yet.
Okay. Well, the girl that plays Betty, Adrienne Wilson, Warren, sorry, Adrienne Warren is her name. I could definitely see her as Barb.
Okay. Yeah, I'm looking her up right now. I'm like, okay, I can see that
She
for
was
sure.
also in an episode or two of Orange is the New Black. I never watched that show.
Okay.
Oh, you know who would be another really great one? We just watched Abbott Elementary together. Oh
Oh,
my
yeah.
gosh. What's her name?
The
What's
main
her
character,
name?
that is Quinta B.
Okay, but could you see her as Barb?
I can see her. I feel like she has like that energy. Like I could see it.
I do too. I absolutely do. Oh my gosh. And then, I don't know. I did not make it all the way through the series, of course, but I was absolutely thinking of Grey's Anatomy. So tell me why McDreamy just popped into my head with Jamie. I had to put Patrick Dempsey as Jamie
I can see
Callahan.
that. I can see that. And then like
Because
how
that man has aged beautifully.
he has. I'm
That's what
like,
I'm saying.
oh, I saw like an interview with him recently. I'm like, why he still looks so good? I don't get
I'm
it.
just saying.
I can
My
see it.
goodness. Even McSteamy, what's his name? Eric Dane, I
I
think
can
is
see
his name.
it. Okay.
And then I don't know. He doesn't always play the smarmy weasel. He doesn't always play the bad guy. But I could kind of see Ryan Gosling pulling off Rye. Abigail said no.
Maybe.
Oh, I know who's the perfect person to play Rye for you. Chris Evans, your
Okay.
favorite.
Well, let's get into some end matters.
Abigail said no. I'm done. She said bye.
We're done.
And soon. Oh
Oh,
my goodness. Okay, but was that so far off though? Honestly, come on.
I can see it. I can see him playing that smarmy weasel. I think he'll be, honestly, I think he would be a good fit for that as well. So.
There you go. All righty. Yes, let's go ahead and get into some end matter. My goodness. Can you believe we're already about to be in the month of March?
Nope, can't believe it.
Insane. Oh my goodness. Well, my dear, we do have to plan the next time that we get to see each other in person. We cannot wait another year and a half. I do need to say that.
Yeah, that's too
But
long.
I will share, so for listener, our book of the month pick for March for the podcast is None of This Is True by Lisa Jewell. Super excited to get into this one. It was a pretty hot little book coming up in 2023. So super excited to dive into that one and to give it a read. Alicia will hopefully be able to join us for the month of March. She's planning to do so. So that will be awesome for the three of us to be reunited. Super excited about that. But yeah, that was The Win by Kristen Hannah. And again, if you haven't read it, I don't know what you've been doing listening to us for an hour and a half when you could have already been putting a big dent in this book. Honestly.
Agreed. So thank you.
Oh my gosh. Well, listener, you can find me on Instagram at Cozy Reads and Sips. That's Cozy Reads and Sips.
And you can find me at the Charles in Charge.
You can also follow the podcast. We have a Tales Over Tales podcast Instagram. Please check us out, follow, give us a rating, give us a review. We'd love to hear from you. Let us know what you're reading. Let us know what you think. And if you're reading along with us, if you have any drink suggestions, we are always giving those off to our cocktail consultant, my beloved saint of a husband. So, until next time, my friends, stay reading.
Stay classy.
And stay
Stay
drinking.
drinking.
Cheers, my love. So good to see you.
Was a pleasure.
Bye.